Well, Allie, I've got two trips out of New York this week.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm flying down to D.C. tomorrow afternoon, do a little hobnobbing with some fancy NPR types. And then Friday, I'm flying out to Las Vegas to do a little hobnobbing with a gin and tonic and a poker table. Both are going to be very fun. The question is, am I going to spend more time actually in the air or sitting on the plane or sitting in the waiting area at JFK?
I'd stock up on the Us Weeklies.
Yeah.
And the New York magazines, by the way.
Absolutely. Funny that there are three airports in this area, JFK, LaGuardia, and Newark, and they are the three most delayed airports in the nation. Now, if you're sitting in, say, Vermont or Salt Lake City or the greater Seattle area, kind of laughing smugly to yourself about how screwed we are here in New York, realize this, 75% of all airport delays around the country get their start right here in New York. So why is that exactly, and what can you do to avoid the worst of it? Great question. Thanks. Here to tell us more about it is Mike Idov. He's a contributing editor at New York Magazine, and he wrote this week's cover story, which is titled Airport Hell and How to Avoid It. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Welcome to the Bryant Park Project. So what are the main reasons that New York's airports are so delayed?
Well, the two basic reasons are just gridlock in the air and gridlock on the ground. It's actually quite simple. We have too many aircraft in there, and we have no space to park them once they reach the ground, and that's basically that.
How does a plane that's delayed at JFK lead someone, in Denver to not, get off the ground in time?
Well, look, you got my best statistic. 75% of delays originate in New York. Now, compare that with the fact that only, and I have giant quotation marks over the word only, 33% of delays in the country happen in New York.
Uh-huh.
So very simple math suggests that each delay in New York, or in the New York metro area rather, triggers 2.5 delays elsewhere. And if you think about it, it's quite simple. When a plane from New York, already late because it spent too much time on the ground, on the tarmac in New York, when it finally makes it over to, let's say, O'Hare, which itself is pretty... pretty booked up.
We used to call it O'Scare.
Right.
Airport.
Right. No, O'Hare actually puts JFK to shame. It's it's an insane place. But anyway, so once that plane reaches O'Hare, guess what happens? The air traffic controllers have to make room for the plane that's already late over the planes that are arriving on time and somehow slot it in and let it land, lest it be late for, 3 hours instead of two. So what happens is a couple of perfectly innocent, regional jets from, let's say, Milwaukee and Lansing get put into a holding pattern, and you can see the domino effect from there.
So there are, at least in terms of New York, and I think you could probably say in a lot of places, too many planes trying to land. You write in your article that the airlines, they only pay $800 a landing fee to bring one of these planes down. So that's like a drop in the bucket.
I pay more for parking.
Right.
So they basically, it's in their benefit to schedule as many of these flights as they can, provided they can put people on them. But there isn't enough room in the sky. You talk about this kind of spaghetti plate of airspace that all these jets are trying to fly through. Tell me about that.
Well, the amazing thing about the airspace design as it is now is that it hasn't been tweaked since the 60s in any meaningful way. And a lot of air paths, the approach paths that airplanes take on approach to New York, a lot of them are from, 1920s when airplanes used to find New York by following the Hudson, and a lot of them are unchanged since the times when people used bonfires and beacons to find themselves. So one would think that so-called airspace redesign would help. Let's say putting another kind of airplane superhighway over America, and just parallel to the one that already exists, which,
right,
by the way, is parallel to I-80, which I find kind of
And you
of
said
funny.
They call it J-80.
Yeah, it's the official name is J-80, and it's basically a westbound kind of I-80 in the sky. But you can guess what happens when they try to introduce that. People on the ground whose noise levels would be upset, affected, get very upset.
So you've got these people on the ground that don't want the, the new I-80 extension or whatever to go over their house. So it's very hard to create more airspace. Who Who can do that, though? I mean, is it the FAA? Is it the Department of Transportation? Who's in charge here? And really, Mike, who is it I'm supposed to hate?
That is a great question. You're supposed to hate everybody.
Okay. Okay, good. I'm halfway there.
Excellent. Because the thing I mentioned this in the article, the main thing that, you know, we need to know about flying is that it's a jurisdictional nightmare. That the system, the way it's set up, enables everybody to point fingers at somebody else. And actually, during, you know, research for this article, I actually lost my patience a couple of times, and I would ask sort of bureaucrats in various agencies, what are you in charge of? And I would get these great, really curt answers, like the FAA spokesperson just said, we land the planes, you know, and you know, just think of it any way you can, because the Port Authority says that they have absolutely no authority over anything other than just basic maintenance of airports, really. And, you know, so who controls the sky? Mostly Department of Transportation. The FAA defers to the Department of Transportation on all big decisions. But the point is there's so many players in the game. There are air traffic controller unions that are feuding with the FAA for ages. There's the airlines themselves. There's consumer advocates, et cetera, et cetera. And basically, who's in charge? Well, there's a great project, actually, that Senator Schumer and others have been pushing.
Chuck Schumer from New York.
Right. The sort of the Northeast Czar project, basically just to institute not a cabinet level, but
oh,
you
not
know,
another czar.
Oh yeah.
So somebody in the Northeast to just kind of manage this whole situation. You also write in your article that because there are so many players, any kind of governmental solution seems like it's kind of a ways off. But just for the person, little on me with my rolling suitcase, and I could be in Los Angeles or Seattle or anywhere, not just in New York. What are a couple of little tricks to try to get away from these delays in terms of what time you fly of the day?
Well, it should tell you something that when I asked to be shown the, you know, the control the air traffic control tower at JFK, the only time the FAA would let me in was 11 a.m. And guess why? 11 a.m. was the deadest hour. I've never been at JFK at 11, and I was shocked. It was nearly empty. So basically from 10 a.m. to right about 1 p.m., if you can find flights taking off at that time, that would be the great time to get out of New York. Because the thing about New York and JFK specifically is we're so weirdly positioned, you know, that all the West Coast flights and all the Western European flights are kind of coming in at the same time.
Oh, right. And so, you also mentioned in there, or it's in the article anyway, that it's good to try to get earlier flights. Those ones are delayed less. If you think about it, at the end of the day,
of course,
all the little
yeah.
mess-ups are starting to back up. And the one I thought was the best was in security when you're going through the line, turn left. If you have a choice between right or left, because people who are right-handed, they tend to go to the right. So left will maybe put you in a slightly shorter line. Mike, maybe we'll have you back a different time to talk about how frustrating this was to report. This must have been probably the most – if you did a lot of flying, if you hung out in a lot of airports, it must have been a tremendously frustrating story. But we thank you for your hard work because it's making all of our life, and mine specifically, a little better.
Just remember, go left.
Go left. Mike Idov, contributing editor at New York Magazine. He wrote a cover story this week called Airport Hell and How to Avoid It. Thanks again.